Hey there, I'm Jack Murtha.
And I'm Tom Castles. Welcome to Databook, everybody, a healthcare analytics news podcast.
So Tom, how good is this? Today's episode of Databook begins with a physical book.
A bunch of physical books, actually.
Books that spark a fire that goes on to burn a lot of things down and sort of change the world. But before any of that happens, these books give way to other stuff. Toys, household products, clothing, anything that you might find in a department store.
And those things somehow lead to groundbreaking tech. Tablets, a voice assistant, and even digital books.
And along the way, these books also lead to all kinds of web and advertising services. They're kind of like the behind-the-scenes tools that make the internet and online commerce work.
And don't forget that these books lead to a very, very active Hollywood film studio.
And maybe these are a bit more loosely related, but they're still very much a part of the story that spawned from these books. There's a celebrated newspaper that's reinventing itself, a fancy grocery chain that is also reinventing itself, and a rocket ship.
A bunch of rocket ships, actually.
By now, you probably figured out that we're not making up some ridiculous Christmas list. You probably guessed that today on Databook, we are bringing you the story of Amazon, one of the world's great disruptors.
Today we're going to show you just how much change this company has caused and just how far it has spread across the business and tech landscape. And it all started with books.
And then we'll get into the future of Amazon and the other great disruptors.
We'll talk about your Googles, your Ubers, and your Apples too.
Because what's next on their path of relentless disruption?
Healthcare. Today our story begins at the dawn of the dot-com era in the early 1990s. There's this guy named Jeff Bezos, maybe you've heard of him before, and he gets an idea to sell books online.
By now, everyone certainly has heard of Jeff Bezos. But back then, he was just another dot-com dreamer. He had studied computer science at Princeton and went on to work in tech and banking and business. But in 1994, he says, hey, let's launch Amazon.com.
Bezos is obviously a smart guy, but he famously says that the company has only about a 30% chance of making it.
But that doesn't scare him from selling his books. In fact, from the very early days, Jeff Bezos has no intention of just stopping at books.
The only reason he starts with books is because, being a former hedge fund guy, he did his homework. He really did his research. He determined that books were the way to go. But his real goal is to build a tech company that's all about making online shopping easy.
And not just easy, but a thing that people actually do. You see, back then, people didn't really buy stuff online. If they wanted a book, they went down to Barnes & Noble, or Borders, or Walden.
So as the 90s goes on, Amazon starts selling millions of books, doing millions of dollars in sales.
This thing that he conceived of is kind of working, but journalists and finance types, they're still skeptical, especially since Amazon is growing really, really quickly and not turning a profit.
Early into the Amazon journey, Bezos starts selling other stuff, all different sorts of goods on behalf of third-party websites.
So this starts with one client in 1996, and it grows to 350,000 clients before the dreaded Y2K.
I still get shivers just thinking about it. At the same time, Amazon is buying other online bookstores and starting to sell music, videos, not sure if they were DVDs or VHSs, video games, home products, toys, you name it.
So Jeff Bezos' plan is working. Amazon is now an official shopping destination for just about anyone and everything. It's like a cooler, sleeker Walmart. And yes, it's also getting heat for putting brick and mortar stores on the defensive. Just like Starbucks did for neighborhood coffee, and just like Walmart did for, well, neighborhood everything.
But still, Amazon is pretty much only in retail until 2002.
That's the year when Bezos looks under the hood of the Amazon machine and says, hey, we've got some great internet tech here. Let's start selling data and marketing and digital tools to other websites. And Amazon Web Services is born.
So is that a key moment for Amazon? Maybe, but to Bezos, it really wasn't a big surprise. He had always felt that this little company would spread out and quickly. He had always been chasing disruption.
And by this point, Bezos had already founded that rocket ship company we told you about earlier. It's called Blue Origin, and it's very much a part of the private space race going on today.
So while some of his employees are building spaceships, others are building, well, books.
Amazon starts selling its Kindle e-readers in 2007. And all of a sudden, ebooks are cool, even though cash-strapped publishers might disagree.
It's this sort of neat homage to Amazon's beginnings, isn't it? Going all the way back to books?
Yeah, and like so many other times in the Amazon story, that moment of disruption foreshadows or even leads to another moment of disruption. And another, and another, and another.
It's really a beautiful thing. One act of disruption begets another.
And in theme with that, in 2011, Amazon releases its Kindle Fire.
Now this is not just an e-reader. It's a tablet, and it's an affordable one. It means that Amazon is in deep competition with Apple and its iPad and whatever else is out there.
It means that Jeff Bezos' dream of being a tech company is completely being realized at this point. Amazon also launches Amazon Studios, and that starts pumping out original TV shows. And these shows, well, they air on a digital streaming service, very disruptive, just like another disruptor, Netflix.
It's sort of a throw-in for Amazon Prime subscribers. A lot of people I know didn't even understand that they had access to this streaming service until some of the shows became too popular to ignore.
And before Amazon was in TV, there was Amazon Music, which was sort of like Spotify, but Amazon Music came online earlier. Also, did we mention that Amazon bought the Washington Post and even Whole Foods? Little side note there.
All of these things, every single one, is new and disruptive. Still, none is as big as Amazon's fundamental shakeup of online retail, or of retail as we know it.
Maybe, at least for now. Because in November 2014, Amazon launches its Echo voice assistant. You might know it as Alexa.
This is the first smart object to really bring an artificially intelligent thing into the American living room in a huge way. Sure, there was Siri before this, but that was software only, and to be honest, it just didn't catch on in the same way.
The Echo starts a cultural moment. It leads to more AI speakers from competitors, and while we don't yet understand the effects that it might have on society, a lot of smart people think that the Echo is a turning point.
As if it was the welcome mat for AI to walk right into our lives.
Anyway, this is not the all-encompassing history of Amazon, but it still has me feeling kind of out of breath, Tom. You know, Jeff Bezos and Amazon have just done so much. They've disrupted so much, and they've defied so many expectations.
And let's not forget a very important point here. We ought to mention that Amazon is profitable now. This year, its market value broke $685 million, more than Microsoft.
And now, Amazon has its sights set on healthcare.
This year, it announced a vague partnership with JP Morgan and Berkshire Hathaway. They want to change insurance and care itself, it seems, but we're not exactly sure how they plan to do it.
What we do know is that throughout Amazon's story, it has always relied on big, big, big money to get things done, to disrupt. And JP Morgan and Berkshire Hathaway have big, big, big money.
Amazon was also interested in starting to sell prescription drugs. It doesn't look like that's going to happen anymore, but it is selling medical supplies and teaming up with healthcare companies.
That Amazon Alexa might even end up in medicine somehow, some way.
But here's the thing, Jack. Amazon isn't the only tech company looking to disrupt healthcare. Others are entering medicine in their own ways.
Sure, you've got Google and its life sciences arm, Verily.
Right, and Google's also trying to achieve interoperability. It's a pretty big task.
And then there's Apple, which has ResearchKit, and then it has its electronic health record system, and maybe down the road, physical clinics that you can walk to and go inside.
We can't forget to mention Uber and Lyft. Both of those companies are trying to disrupt the healthcare transportation scene.
The point is, these companies all have legendary origin stories and incredible track records of disruption. We could have profiled any one of them for this podcast. They know how to take their business from one market and expand it to another.
The bottom line with these companies is that they know how to get things done. They know how to make money. And they've got their sights set on making the experience better for the customer.
But healthcare is far from easy.
It might just be the toughest conquest of them all.
So Does Silicon Valley have what it takes to turn its promises of disruption into what could be a radically different healthcare system?
So to get a better picture of what exactly is going on with these potential healthcare disruptors, we've brought on Kate McCarthy.
She's a senior analyst for Forrester, and she's responsible for helping CIOs and healthcare leaders understand all of the crazy innovations going on in healthcare these days. She's sort of a health tech guru.
And just this month, she published a paper on how the so-called Amazon effect is ready to disrupt healthcare.
So, Kate, welcome to Databook.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
So to start off, can you give us a feel for the disruption going on in healthcare right now?
It's so interesting because I think we've talked about the possibility of disruption in healthcare for a long time now. We talked about it when the Affordable Care Act passed, and by and large, not much changed. There's been some resistance, I think, lately to, you know, really open that dialogue again and say, okay, no, actually, this time we mean it. The industry is going to go through disruption. And the reason we think now is different is because before we always had the regulatory pressures, right? And we had cost pressure and we had all sorts of inefficiencies in our industry that were worth trying to solve for. But we didn't have one key component, and that's competition, that there wasn't the kind of driving competition that has forced other industries to go through digital transformation. And now with Amazon and JP Morgan and Berkshire Hathaway starting to talk about entering the space, and with the evolution of big tech giants entering the space, you know, Apple on the consumer device and patient record side, Google has done quite a bit in healthcare already. You know, the number of tech giants in the healthcare space really trying to disrupt the way that technology is deployed and the way that we serve consumers with digital engagement as a real legitimate and viable option for the future. It's a fundamental shift in the last couple of years. And that's why we really think that now is the time that the industry will fully go through digital transformation and really see a different business model emerge.
What does it say about the state of medicine that all these big players want to step in and sort of just blow it all up?
There's a lot of respect for clinical innovation in the U.S., that there is, you know, genuine appreciation for the advancements we've had in things like treating cancer and, you know, the surgical advancements we've had. But we've not done a great job managing quality outcomes, and we haven't done a great job managing cost. And still, most of what we do is analog in nature. So it requires a face-to-face visit with a physician, or, you know, the way that we engage consumers is, you know, through telephone or paper. I know I personally still get paper EOBs from my insurance company. And I think about the last time I got a paper bill from anyone else. That was years ago. You know, those are things that I think people have gotten so used to having digital access to in their day-to-day lives and other industries. They expect it and they want it in healthcare too. And so these big tech giants have recognized that this industry has lagged behind, and that lag is contributing to, you know, us not doing better on cost and us not doing better on quality. And they want to see this industry succeed and want to invest in the digital transformation that will help us finally get real ROI and finally really reduce the way that we spend while improving quality.
Healthcare is not an easy business. What makes these giants think that they can come in and get it right?
It's funny because I think there have been moments in the past where tech giants have tried and failed. You know, a long time ago, Google actually tried creating the rough equivalent to a patient portal, and it wasn't successful. Consumers just didn't want to use it. Incumbents still have this feeling like the tech giants might not be successful because there's all of this institutional knowledge we have about what we do and how we do it. And we have these proprietary systems, you know, like the Epics and Cerners of the world for health records that are really difficult to integrate with. And so there's a little bit of a disillusion that the tech giants can actually come in and do better than we've done. And what we're finding is that they actually can come in and do better. You know, you look at what a Salesforce can do with their CRM and their health cloud platform to, you know, serve as a better engagement layer than say an Epic for physicians and for patients and for care managers. But then they have a much, much more robust kind of digital platform so that they can have apps and they can integrate things like wearable devices and, you know, a type 1 diabetic with a CGM and a glucose monitor. Those devices can now kind of integrate easily into a digital platform. And today's systems just don't have those capabilities. And so I think that's the difference, that essentially, you know, these big tech giants have figured out how to create the integrations we need. And because of that, they're able to start to successfully deploy in healthcare and do things that our proprietary vendors have not been able to do.
Tech has its problems. Just look at Facebook and the privacy concerns there. What makes Amazon and Google and Uber and Apple think that they can not only properly handle healthcare, but maintain the public trust?
If you look at the big data breaches in the industry, by and large, those are data breaches that happened because the healthcare provider or payer organization didn't do a sufficient job securing their network. And the actual technology we have is by and large less secure than what these tech giants are offering. So the standards for deploying technology in the cloud in healthcare are much, much more rigorous than on-premise technology deployment. You know, just think about the fact that something like a fax machine is actually still considered a secure way to share patient data. There are lots of privacy standards and there are lots of, you know, security standards that any vendor, healthcare or not, has to comply with in order to deploy technology that handles patient data in the US. If it's me, I feel better about, you know, someone with the kind of experience in industries like finance and banking that Amazon and Google have. I'm probably not going to trust Facebook as a vendor in healthcare anytime soon, but I think we knew that they were a little bit loose with the way that they handled consumer data before GDPR. And now, obviously, we have even more concerns about their ability to safely and securely manage consumer privacy. That's a separate issue. I don't have those same concerns about Google or Apple or Amazon. You know, these are tech companies that have shown that they can be trusted with consumer data in other industries. And so I don't think the concerns are quite the same there. And I believe that Americans are smart enough to understand the difference.
We've seen some back and forth in terms of decision making. One day Amazon is entering the pharmacy and the next day it's not. What can we take from this sort of lack of clarity?
Well, I think that there's different organizations trying different things. This isn't one size fits all. And so you can look at an IBM and you can say, you know, this is a company that has grown in healthcare mostly through acquisition. And so they've purchased things like population health companies and healthcare analytic companies. And they've built the IBM Watson for health. And that's obviously a really powerful cognitive platform. And they've got great use cases in disease and treatment pathing for oncology. And so where they're entering the space is really around, you know, what's the powerful insight that we can get once we start getting data from disparate sources and once we start looking at, you know, the power of AI in healthcare. And how can we use that to improve the way that we treat something like cancer? Whereas Amazon is partnering up with JP Morgan and Berkshire Hathaway to come up with a better way to manage cost and care for their employees as a starting point, with obviously the long-term goal of offering something to the public. And that's likely to be more of an end-to-end. It's likely to include some sort of creativity around insurance and benefit design, and it's likely to include, you know, virtual care and other digital health options. And it's likely to use AWS as a way to securely ingest and build digital experiences in healthcare. And so that's likely to be more of an end-to-end than an IBM might do. Google, you know, Google is one of the first platforms that actually has Google Home as a virtual assistant that can be secured for healthcare. And they can schedule appointments in Epic, one of the health record vendors, in, you know, 10 seconds or less. So that interface exists today. So, you know, each of these companies enters with a slightly different set of objectives and I think grows from there. You know, Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, JP Morgan Chase, they're the only ones that have sort of said holistically, we want to look at the end-to-end of healthcare, and then we'll figure out where we'll play based on, you know, a goal to better manage care and cost for our employees. But most other organizations kind of start where they are. So, you know, Apple with the Apple Watch has a great set of consumer device opportunities. So entering where you have strength, I think, is one of the things that we see these big tech giants trying to do.
What about the tech itself? Are there any particular areas that you think are ripe for a major tech makeover?
There's a huge set of opportunities around some of the new technologies. So not just kind of the digital platforming, but if you look at things like virtual assistants, if you think about what you could do in a smart home to keep people that have either chronic disease or that are aging in place safely in their home with things like prescription reminders and, you know, the ability to connect with a virtual assistant when you have a question about something so that people don't feel quite so isolated. You know, those become potential powerful advancements to keep people engaged at home and, you know, not necessarily replacing a face-to-face visit, but giving people and empowering people to better manage their own care independently. Whereas I think right now, a lot of times what happens is we give patients really complicated instructions when they discharge. And then we expect them to just kind of figure it out at home. And the reality is people get home, they have questions, and physicians can be difficult to get in touch with. You know, going through the process to make a phone call or send an email and waiting for a reply back, well, a whole day can go by before you hear back. You know, imagine if someone doesn't have to wait that day and they can get immediate feedback in their home through a secure virtual assistant. I think that's, you know, one really cool thing. And one of the other really cool things that I've seen is what we're doing with VR. You look at what Samsung's been able to do with Cedars-Sinai around pain management. You know, they're going through FDA approval and they believe that their VR therapy can start to improve the opioid epidemic because it's so effective managing pain that we might be able to either get people off opioids or use this in place of opioids in many cases. And I think that's profound that, you know, we're talking about using technology to treat pain instead of set of drugs that have created a real epidemic in this country.
Before we let you go, I want to dangle a carrot for you. Do you dare make any predictions about how anything might turn out in this space?
The prediction I would make is that people think, even just 5 years out, that the way we do business is going to be fundamentally different than it is today. And we will go through digital transformation. And so we know that organizations are increasingly delivering more care virtually, you know, whether it's secure email or an actual video visit or consumer devices connecting in the home. More than half of care is going to be virtual in just a few short years' time. And I think if we think even longer term, we're going to have to think very differently about what our business model is. It will rely less and less on the bricks and mortar we have today and more on tech innovation. And so how today's incumbents think about what a digital future looks like for them, that's the thing I think people really need to start to ponder. I believe Amazon, JP Morgan, and Berkshire Hathaway will come up with a way to do things differently. It might not be the only way, but they will provide a way to provide insurance and care different than we do it today. And so incumbents that want to survive disruption and really want to have competitive offerings for what will be a very different future need to think about investing in technologies to support that today. Otherwise, it's just going to be too expensive to buy back in when they realize the world around them has changed. And we've seen that in other industries that have gone through digital transformation. So I'm not saying, you know, anything that we haven't seen before, but I think everyone thinks healthcare is protected and it's going to be different. And I think we're past that moment. I think now really transformation will happen. And so people have to think about how they want to invest in that future.
Everybody, Kate McCarthy is a senior analyst at Forrester, helping healthcare navigate these changes. Kate, thanks so much for spending some time with Databook.
Thanks so much for having me.
So the level of disruption going on, or that could be going on in healthcare, is overwhelming. Almost every week, it seems like a tech company is announcing some new project, and there's a lot of uncertainty. Is all of this big talk going to actually pan out?
That's the subject of this week's Insight, and we're glad that it brings our friend Ryan Black to Databook.
Ryan is an editor for Healthcare Analytics News, and he's covered plenty of this disruption business. That has put him in touch with some pretty important people in healthcare, And they've had some pretty interesting stuff to say about all this.
So, Ryan, why don't you give us something good to go home with?
Well, it's pretty interesting. You know, you go to these different meetings around the sort of the health tech sphere, and you talk to different leaders from organizations, and it seems that everybody has a sense that a large change is coming from these outside actors, sort of. It's just how it's going to be received. So I think kind of at a couple of meetings I was at in the past few months, there's sort of a tale of two Chris's. The one of them is Chris Allen, who's the CEO of Authority Health. That's a population health initiative up in Detroit. And he was talking about, you know, how if these companies like CVS and Apple and Berkshire Hathaway even came in and healthcare was just sort of standing around, they would, quote, clean our clock and just completely take over the whole thing. On the other hand, you know, I spoke to Chris Ross, who is the CIO of Mayo Clinic at HIMSS in Las Vegas back in March, and he was extremely enthusiastic about the sorts of changes that are going to come. He seemed to think that, you know, having fresh minds and very innovative minds coming into the space could only be a good thing. So I don't think that there's anyone out there in the space right now who's looking at this and going, nah, nothing's going to happen, nothing's going to change. It's just whether or not, you know, healthcare itself is going to have the say it might want to have. And whether, you know, they're going to lead or these new companies, CVS, Amazon, even the ride sharing companies like Lyft and Uber, if they're going to lead the charge. So there's little doubt that, you know, there's going to be substantial change in this sphere. That's just kind of between whether it's met with total enthusiasm or muted apprehension.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Databook.
But before we go, Jack and I have a quick request.
Yes, please reach out to Healthcare Analytics News, that's us, on social media, the website, wherever, and give us your healthcare app recommendations. We want to know what you're using, what's helping you. And if you give us some hidden gem, it might end up in the next print edition of the magazine.
Also, be sure to check out hcanews.com for the best health IT news and views.
And remember to subscribe, rate, and review Databook, the official podcast of Healthcare Analytics News.
All right. We've got some disrupting to do.
Goodbye.